amongst yourselves up there. Okay, kids, and adults, the rest of you as well. So, Ella and I, right, we sometimes play this little matching game. And actually, when my brother Jamie was out these past couple of months, he played this game a fair bit as well. You know the little game where you, like, and hers is the Dora version, right, where you lay out all the little cards on the table, and there's two of each one, and you match them up, and you're supposed to flip over the one, and then find the matching one, and then find the other one, and tie them together, right? Find out which one is which. You know this game that we're playing. Well, what amazes me every time is how good Ella's short-term memory is. Like, how good children's short-term memory is. I mean, I try my very hardest to beat her. I really do. I try every ounce of my memory capacity to beat her, and every single time Ella wins. That is something that God has given little children an ability, short-term memory. So here's the question. You guys are all 8 to 10 years old. No, 8 to 12. Chinita's here too, right? Where's Chinita? 12? Somewhere. There you are. There she is. There's 12 years old. Okay. So let's see if your short-term memory. Oh, great. Is this good? I'm having some technical difficulties here today. Thank you, Meadow. Let's see if your short-term memory is as good as. Let's see if your short-term memory is good. So we've been teaching through the book of Revelation, right? That's what we started. I taught once in the fall, and then Mark taught this last time. So just an open general question for you, okay? What can you tell me that you remember about the book of Revelation? Anything, any fact, any little thing. It could be something specific that Mark taught last time or that I taught. It could be something general. Anything. Tell me anything. Isaac? Yeah, I did, but... But that's a great answer. I mean, that is a great answer. You're right. No, that's fine. Fine. Christy? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally. Okay. So she's got something there. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What else? What else can you tell me? Okay. That wasn't you. So let's try Evan. You know anything? Yes. Chinita? It's like a dream. Yeah, it's like a vision. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. Good. Max, you remember anything? Nothing? Boy, it's really sinking in deep, isn't it? Okay, that's fine. Evan? Oh, yeah. Yeah, good one. Okay, yeah, the book of Revelation is called Revelation, which is self-evident in the title. Yeah, what does the book of Revelation mean? Well, okay, here's the answer to that question. Revelation, in the title, has the word reveal, right? And Christy may have just told us something that it's wanting to reveal. Revelation is wanting to reveal to us Jesus. It's a dream, it's a vision, but at the heart of it all is Jesus. Revelation wants us to understand who Jesus is. It wants us to understand where Jesus is right now. It wants us to understand that he is alive, and it's telling us that he exists. Jesus is alive, existing in another dimension, and that dimension, do you know the name of the dimension? We have another word for it. Isaac? Yes. Yes, that Jesus is alive, that he's present with us in heaven, that this dimension is right here. It's right there. It's just right there, right? And the writer of Revelation wants us to know that heaven is real, that it's real, and that Jesus there is real. And there's this pastor in Vancouver. He's a really lovely man, and his name is Daryl Johnson. And Daryl Johnson uses this expression when he talks about Revelation. He says, it's really real, that if this is real, like this, and you, and this is real, and the music we just played is real, if those things are real, Revelation wants us to know that it is really real, that heaven and Jesus is really real. And it's trying to awaken us to Jesus and awaken us to how really, really is by using, like Chinita said, all of this crazy vision language and images and pictures and word pictures, and it's doing this to try and evoke something, to stir us up so that we'll be alerted to say, what's going on here? Something really real is taking place, right? So that's what it's trying to say. Now, Revelation is a letter. It's also a book that we'll see, but it's a letter. Does anybody remember who the letter of Revelation is addressed to? Remember that? Anybody? Okay, so it was written by a pastor, and the pastor's name was John. And John was one of the 12 disciples of Jesus. And John was pastoring seven churches in a country that's today known as Turkey. In the day, back then, that was called Asia Minor. It was part of the Roman Empire. And John was pastoring these churches. And this vision that he had, he then sent on like a book to these seven churches that he was pastoring. And does anybody remember what's happening then? If that triggers something, do you remember what's happening to the churches? Isaac, what? He was in jail, yeah. And so were a whole bunch of other Christians. They were, the people in his church were being persecuted by the Roman Empire. These guys, Emperor Domitian. And Emperor Nero, these were really bad emperors. And they didn't like the fact that these Christians were claiming that Jesus was their king. They hated that. And so what did these guys do? They started chasing after and persecuting all of these Christians because what they were claiming. And they were throwing them to the lions. And they were having gladiator battles at their expense. And as a result of this, these Christians in John's church were terrified. They were afraid for their life. And so John has this vision of Jesus, and he sends this vision off to these churches that he loves so much. And he did because he wanted to bring them comfort. And the first thing that the book of Revelation says to all these churches is this. Listen, it says, don't be afraid. You got nothing to be afraid of. And why it says you don't have to be afraid is because Jesus is on the throne and he's really real. And then it goes on to tell us what Jesus looks like. And when they see what Jesus looks like, they're like, oh, I don't have to be afraid because he's big and he's strong and he's in control. And whatever happens here, I'll be okay because Jesus is on the throne. That's what Revelation is. Revelation starts off with an opening vision of Jesus. There's seven visions of Jesus in Revelation. We're going to look at all seven of them. That's what we're going to do in this next series. But today, we're going to finish off the first vision of Jesus. I started it. Mark taught some of it last time. I'm going to finish off the vision today. And I want to start just with the first thing. Remember last time Mark was teaching us? He was talking about all the things that the vision said that Jesus looked like, all the appearances, these word pictures that John was having in this vision. We're going to continue on with what Jesus looked like and what he sounded like. We're going to jump in partway through the teaching, or partway through the vision today. Now, as we start there, I'm going to start by playing us all a sound. And I want you to listen to the sound really carefully. I'm going to play it for a little while. I want you to listen to it. And as you hear the sound, I want you to think, what does this make me feel like? What do I think about? What do I sense? What do I feel when I listen to this sound? Okay? Everybody. Oh, I left. when you hear that sound, what do you think? What goes through your mind when you hear that sound? Evan, what do you think? You heard the fish ladders that go around the dam. Yeah, good. Move this guy back. What else do you hear? Max. Waterfall, yeah. So that's what it is. Now tell me, how does it make you feel? Lewis. Confused. Then what did you feel? Nothing. Janina, what's it make you feel like? Calm. What else? Adults, what does it make you feel? Small. Yeah, you hear it going. It's still, it's this, the words that came to my mind were that it's consistent. Like it's just kind of there, you know, that river that just never stops. If you go down to the Seymour right now, you'd hear the same sound. And it was, you've heard that sound for thousands and thousands of years, just the sound of the water rolling over those rocks down there. It's the sound of, it's beautiful. Right? It's also calming, like Janita just said there, right? Like how often do you, you know, when you hear this sound, it evokes just this real sense of peace. I am getting some major vibration here, aren't I? It's also like a river, right? Brings this sense of strength to it, doesn't it? Like when you hear that, have you ever seen a river? Like the power of a river to erode rocks, all of these things. That there's beauty, there's power, there's strength, there's consistency, there's calm. All of these things you find in the sound of this river that's keep on rolling and rolling and rolling. Now, with that in your mind and with that sound in your mind, listen to what we see next. This is the passage that we're reading. It says, I, John, your brother and partner in the tribulation. That's like a big word for saying like a trying, difficult time. I, John, your brother and partner in the tribulation and the kingdom and the patient endurance that are in Jesus was on the island called Patmos. That's what Isaac just said. He was in prison there on account of, in other words, because of, I was there in that prison because of the word of God and because of Jesus. I was in prison because of what I would believe about God and about Jesus. I was in the Spirit, which is a way of him saying, I was in deep prayer on the Lord's day, and I heard behind me a loud voice like a trumpet. And it was saying, write what you see in a book and send it to the seven churches, to Ephesus and to Smyrna and to Pergamum and to Thyatira and to Sardis and to Philadelphia and to Laodicea. That's the name of the seven churches that John was pastoring. And then he says, and then I turned to see the voice. So he heard the voice, and now he turns and he sees the voice that was speaking to me. And on the turning, I saw these seven golden lampstands. And in the midst of the lampstands was one like a son of man. And we learned that last time. That was Jesus. And he was clothed there in a long robe with a golden sash around his chest. And Mark taught us about that last time. And the hairs of his head were white, white like wool, like snow. And his eyes were like flaming fire. And his feet were like burnished bronze, refined in a furnace. And then here we have it. And his voice was like the roar of many waters. It says that Jesus' voice, guys, was like that, what that we just heard. It was like, and again, it's a word picture, but it's like, it's saying, he's trying to put description around what it was like. It was a word, like it was like a rushing water. And John's saying then that this one that stands amongst us in our churches, this one that's really real, that his voice is like this, like it's powerful and consistent and mighty and beautiful, and yet it's also calm and peaceful. Now here's what I want you to take away from this, okay? in our life and in our world, there are all sorts of voices that we are constantly hearing. And some of those voices are good, and some of those voices are not so good. They can be our teachers. They can be our friends. They can be the media. They can be YouTube that we listen to. All sorts of different voices that we hear. And these voices are constantly saying different things to us. The voices sometimes are saying, this is what you're supposed to look like. And they say, this is what it means to be cool. And they say, this is what you should want in relationships. And they say, this is what sex is about. And they tell us, this is what's cool and this is what isn't. And these are the kinds of clothes that you need to have. And this is what you want to wear. And these voices are every day are constantly bombarding us. But you know something? There is one voice, what Revelation is trying to say to us. Listen, there's one voice that's greater than all of these voices. And the voice is Jesus. And his voice is mighty. And his voice is powerful. And his voice is consistent. And when John uses a word picture to try and describe it, he says it's like a rushing water. And amidst all the other voices in the world, it's Jesus' voice, even more than our friends, even more than YouTube, that we want to hear, because Jesus' voice is the voice that tells us to understand the difference between what's right and what's wrong. He helps us to know that. And so it goes something like this. Those voices often say to you, this is what you're supposed to look like. This is what's beautiful. But the voice of Jesus comes back to you and says, but haven't you heard? You're my beloved, and I am yours. Didn't you know? I told my servant David to write a poem. And in the poem he wrote that I knew you in your mother's womb. That I know every hair on your head. And I designed you just this way. And I love you. You see the difference between his voice and the other voices? Or here's the other one. Sometimes the voices around you, right? They say like, hey, you know what you really need? You need an iPhone 7. That's what you need. You really need an iPhone 7, because if you have an iPhone 7, well, that's the greatest piece of technology ever. And it will make you so cool, and you'll be so up to date, and you'll be right in line with everyone else. And you know what Jesus says back to that? Jesus says, why do you spend all your money and your time on things that moss are going to eat away and that rust is going to destroy? Why don't you spend time on your soul? See, there's a difference between that voice. And John's trying to say to us here that Jesus, friends, kids, is speaking. He's constantly speaking. And that's a voice we want to learn to listen to. Because that voice helps us to know the difference between what's right and what's wrong. He's speaking. He's speaking. All right? Okay. So, kids, you're going to go with Megan and Jonathan. You're going to talk about worship a little bit more. And hopefully, I know this. Actually, I don't say hopefully. I know the voice that they're going to bring to you is a voice that sounds something like Jesus, because they didn't know what his voice sounds like. So, let's carry on. In verse 16, right after the voice, and I love that. I just love that voice. We did that with our leadership retreat last year, but I love that, hearing that voice. But right, the next thing it says, that about Jesus, it says, in his right hand, verse 16, he held seven stars. Seven stars. In his right hand, he holds seven stars. And a few verses later, at the end of the passage, we're told, so we don't have to guess because it seems like it's a bit of a mystery, we don't have to guess, we're told exactly what the seven stars are. He says, as for the mystery of the seven stars that you saw in my right hand and the seven golden lampstands, the seven stars are the angels of the seven churches. seven stars. He's holding these in his hands. The seven stars are the angels. Now, we don't know a lot about angels, actually. Angels are mentioned lots in Scripture, but we don't actually know a lot about what they are. But we do know this one thing, at least this one thing. More than one thing, but we know this. They're referred to as warriors of light. And they do work on God's behalf, right? They work, they war, they do justice, they bring goodness in a spiritual realm on behalf of God. And later then, in the book of Revelation, we're told in chapter 5 that the cosmos are filled with these angels. In fact, in chapter 5, verse 11, we see this heavenly picture again of Jesus. And there we see that 10,000 times 10,000 angels are gathered around the throne of Jesus. Now, when we read numbers in Revelation, we know not to read them in a concrete fashion. They are there to expose something deeper to us. And 10,000 times 10,000 is this number that's saying it's not 10 times 10, which would be a lot. It's not 100 times 100, which would be, wow, there's an incredible number. It's not even 1,000 times 1,000. It's 10,000 times 10,000, which is Revelation's way of saying an infinite number. Like, you can't count them. They're beyond the stars in the sky. They're beyond the sand on the seashore. And this is what heaven is filled like. Thousands, ten thousands times ten thousands times ten thousands of angels. Now, I was thinking about this. NASA and other space organizations around the world, right? They spend like millions, billions of dollars every year looking for extraterrestrial life. And I don't know, maybe they will find extraterrestrial life in some far corner of our universe. Maybe they will find something. But I do know that what John is telling us is that this life has already been found. And the cosmos, his heavens, are filled with angels, these angelic warriors of light. But what we see here is that Jesus is standing amongst the churches and he holds in his hand these warriors. He holds them in his hand. And these implication, because there are seven of them, the implication is that these seven angels are assigned to the seven churches. That there is an angel that is placed over each of these churches to guard them in the spiritual realm, to bring protection about them. And what I believe, and it doesn't say this, so I can't know this for sure, but I believe this is true. That what was true then of those churches is true now. I believe that there is an angel, that there are angels assigned. And if we had eyes to see what Revelation 5:11 is revealing to us, if we had eyes to see and this room could be opened up, I believe that we would see that it is filled with angels. And they are here for our protection. And they are here to keep us safe. And they are here to keep our children safe. And just like these churches that were facing such severe persecution, we might not be facing that persecution. Whatever it is that we are worried about, whatever tribulation that we are going through, whatever our churches may be facing that we actually don't even know what we are facing, because there are things in the spiritual realm that we could be facing that we don't even know that we are facing, but we can have confidence, I believe, that God, Jesus, stands in the middle with these warriors of light. He stands in the middle even right now with warriors of light saying, you do not need to be afraid. You don't. Whatever is going on right now, you don't need to be afraid. Next. Actually, the next thing it says is coming from his mouth is a sharp double-edged sword, which leans into the voice. And I think just based on time, I think let's leave that one aside. It's filling out the voice thing, but let's leave that one aside and go on to the next thing that it says. It says, where is it? Oh, here. It says, and his face was like the sun, shining, not just like a cloudy day, but it tells us in full strength, like all of it. His face was like the sun, shining in full strength. This is what Google teaches us about the sun. The sun in Greek, helios in Latin, sol, is the star at the center of the solar system and is by far the most important source of energy for life on Earth. It is a nearly perfect spherical ball of hot plasma with an internal convective motion that generates a magnetic field via a dynamo process. I have no idea what that means. If any of you know what a dynamo process is, you can fill me in later on. Its diameter is about 109 times of the Earth, and its mass about 330,000 times that of the Earth, accounting for about 99.86% of the total mass of the solar system. Now, if you do the math on that, and I'm not a mathematician, but some of you are, that means that if you combine all the rest of the planets, all the rest of the dust, all the rest of the comets, all the rest of the asteroids and meteors, and all the rest of the stuff that's in the solar system, and you condense it all, that means that accounts for 0.14% of the mass of our solar system, and the sun is everything else. It's big. That's what it's saying. It's big. Now, here's the thing. I pulled that out because I think it's interesting and I like interesting facts. But in that day, none of this would have been known by the people there, right? None of it. They wouldn't have known any of this about the sun. But they lived in a desert. So they knew the sun. They knew the sun, some might say, better than people that live in Vancouver, right? They knew the sun. How many of you have been in a desert before? Arizona, California, wherever it's been. Yeah, and I've been in the Israel desert, the Negev desert. You know the sun when you're in the desert. I mean, and these people knew the sun. They understood its power. They understood its brilliance. They understood its warmth. They knew that their lives depended on it. They knew that their very life depended on it. They knew that that sun was responsible for the growth of those crops. And if the sun went away somehow, those crops would die. Their livestock would die. And it'd be shortly after they'd all die as well. They knew about the power of the sun that brought life. And they also knew about the power of the sun that brought light. That it was the light when it came up in the morning that separated the darkness from the day. And without that sun rising up in the east in the morning, they would stumble around in darkness and then die because none of their crops would live. They knew that the sun gave them light, and they knew that the sun gave them life. And John says that this is in Jesus' face. That when we look at him and we see his face bright, shining as the sun, as the song just said, when we see his face, when we look into his face, it's there that we find life that feeds us, that feeds our souls, and we find light that separates the darkness from what is right and true. And when we look into his face, we don't just see that a little bit. We don't just have a little bit of life. But we have the full strength of life. And we have the full strength of light. Life and light in all its fullness are found in the one that stands in the middle, that stands here today. Everything you need is in his face. And what happens next? After seeing Jesus, John says this, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as though I were dead. It happens every time someone encounters God or an angelic being. They fall at his feet as though dead. It happened here to John. And when you read this, you should say, of course. Of course you did, because you would too. If you encountered something like this and all that this word picture was trying to describe for you, you would fall at his feet as though dead as well. But I love what happens next. Because next it says, and then he placed his hands on me. The one that holds the angels reaches out and puts his hand on John. And then he speaks. That river speaks. And the first thing it says to John is, "Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. Why not? He says to John, here's why you don't have to be afraid. Because I'm the first and the last. I'm the beginning and I'm the end. I'm the Alpha and the Omega. And the living one. I died. John, you were there with me. All the rest of the disciples left, but you were the one disciple that was there. You were there with me. I died. You saw me. I died. You saw this. But behold, I'm alive and I live forevermore, and I have in my hand the keys of death and of Hades. You have nothing to be afraid of. Somewhere around 1663, the great artist Rembrandt, he painted what many art historians describe really as the greatest painting to ever be painted. I don't know whether that is the case. I'm sure there is much debate. You all know this painting. You've seen it many times. Most of you have anyways. Certainly is, I think, my favorite painting. And it's titled The Return of the Prodigal Son. And in this one painting, Rembrandt manages to tell basically the whole of the story of Jesus' most famous parable, the one where the boy asks his father for his inheritance and gets the inheritance and then goes off to a distant land and squanders it on wild living and then finds himself destitute and comes to his senses. He's like, I need to go home, but he's horrified about going home. And on the way home, as Jesus tells the story, he recounts in his mind all the excuses that he's going to bring to his father because he's afraid that his father's going to come down on him hard when he gets home, and he's expecting anger. But as Jesus tells the story, instead what he receives is what the painting is picturing here. He receives from his Father mercy and kindness and grace and forgiveness. And while studying for this teaching this time, it's this painting that I've had in the back of my mind the whole time when we come to this scene. This is the painting that's in the back of my mind, because I think maybe when Rembrandt was painting this story of the prodigal son, that maybe he didn't just have the prodigal son story in his mind, but maybe he also had this vision of John before the feet of Jesus, that this is maybe something like what John saw too. Jesus reaching down and saying, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. And you know, in the painting, Rembrandt, and I love this part about this painting, Rembrandt, in the hands of the Father, has painted both a male hand on the left and a female hand on the right. The Son has all of this. These traditional things of strength and courage and tenderness and compassion. He has all of this. And that's what John had on that day. And that's what we have. Jesus, bright, shining as the sun that looks down on us, says, don't be afraid. Whatever you're facing, don't be afraid. The really real is here. He's standing amongst us. His face shines like the sun. And his eyes are like blazing fire. And in his hand he holds angels. And his feet are like burnished bronze, and out of his mouth comes a sharpened sword. And this one that is really real reaches down into us today, and he says, don't be afraid. And as Mark taught us last time, he's also wearing this priestly robe. He's made a bridge between us and between God. That's what priests do. And the whole time, he says,